And we are back, Black and a Half, episode number 142.
142.
My name is Silas Lindenstein. I'm one of your hosts.
And I'm Samantha Rund, the other one of your hosts.
And welcome to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. We are here, the special, I guess it's a holiday episode technically, because it's coming out at Christmas time, much like Die Hard, right? There may be Christmas references to it, but is it a Christmas episode? Who knows? You be the judge. People will talk about this Christmas episode for years to dissect it, much like Die Hard or The Ref or other Christmas movies that we mentioned in this episode that we have with a guest and dear friend. He's known as B-Lock Kilt Off. That's his stripper name. He's actually Blake Kilt Off. He's a very funny comedian out of Seattle.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
I'll welcome him. Now unmute him because he's crazy. But he came on here. He's a joke slinger. He's known as the Billy the Kid of jokes in the Seattle area, as the Sam West of jokes, the Wile E. Coyote,
Wild Bill Hickok,
the Wild Bill Hickok of comedy,
famously shot in the back
in the Snohomish County area in particular, in a 1 mile radius around Pilchucks, he is known there. Wildly. He joined us on the show today. It was great to have him because, you know, I couldn't get anyone else.
Yeah, no, it's great to finally be on your short list.
Finally, he made my short list when my computer crashed and I had to rebuild it. It was great having him on here to chat with us about some Christmas movies, about creature features, one of his obsessions. We had a great chat with him. Get his origin story. He answers the world famous 7 questions. I don't know what voice I'm doing now, but I'm gonna go with it. It's just a character I'm working on. It's like a somebody else doing a bad impression of Trump.
That was a really bad impression.
It was. I mean, that's
terrible.
So I nailed the character. I nailed it. It was the character doing a bad impression, not me. Folks, thank you so much for supporting the show all year long. This is going to be the last show of 2020.
People support this show?
People do support this. Funny you should bring that up, Blake. We have some wonderful supporters on the Patreon, the Black and a Half Patreon page, which you can go to patreon.com/blackandahalf. Folks, have become some folks join our League of Extraordinary Listeners for as little as $1. And we have some Inner Circle members like Stephen Ward, Tara Widener, Keith Nagel. They pledge a little more a month and they help support and make this show possible. And you too could join that. And if you're white, it's like paying reparations. What?
I am interested in this because, as I told you, I travel in kink communities. And if you have a list of subscribers, that would probably be very interesting for all the people I know who are looking for masochists.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Okay. That's good.
If you have a bunch of people who enjoy your show, I know a bunch of people who would enjoy them.
Yeah. It's called
cross promotion.
I don't
think people enjoy our show in that fashion.
I'm just saying, if you know a bunch of people who enjoy pain.
I got your joke. I got the slinging that you were doing.
Some joke slang.
And I refuse to acknowledge it.
We often refuse to acknowledge Blake, and that's okay.
I'm used to it.
He's used to it. Him and his little tree.
There's a reason I have a Christmas tree that's 6 feet.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, supporters. Thank you for everyone who's left a review on Apple Podcasts this year. We really appreciate that because it helps us other people noticed the show, the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Thank you to all those people. And
One final thought, Silas. You were telling me at the beginning how, I guess by way of intro, you were sort of reminiscing about how you didn't say I inspired you, but I was like the first comic who you saw doing comedy and was like, oh, I could do that. And I wanted to say, hey, you know what? I've been thinking about it for a while and you've inspired me in the same fashion. I'm going to do a podcast.
Oh, thank you. There's
anyone can do it. So
we need more podcasts by unknown comedians. That's it's an untapped market, and I think you would do well there. And speaking of well tapped, well, I want to thank our sponsors, of one of which is a sister podcast to this. It's called You're Buying a Home with Silas Lindenstein. That is hosted by me, Silas Lindenstein, of the boutique boat brokerage in Seattle. If you're looking to buy a home, actually anywhere in the U.S., go listen to this podcast at yourbuyingahome.com and find out everything it takes, a step-by-step journey into buying a home, hosted by me. And it's also brought to you by
Your Brother Podcast.
I
just had to, since you have your sister podcast. I was like, okay, I'll get a brother podcast. Beyond Technique with me, Samantha Rund. So that podcast you can check out for additional tips on performance skills. And I've got guests on there talking about that as well. And my coaching, Beyond Technique Coaching, if you're looking for a coach to help you with performance skills, voice, body, and mind, so you can bring more of your whole self to life and work for auditions, interviews, real estate scripts, improv, communication, relationships, all that good stuff. You can always reach out to me at beyondtechniquecoaching@gmail.com.
Gino, last week, I got a message last week from my brother who was listening to our podcast. And he said, after we were talking about this, about your techniques and acting, he said he thought his 15 years, 20 years of listening to professional wrestling promos has helped him become a better salesperson on the phone, just like how you talk to somebody. So, like, I just thought it was funny about where inspirations come from on how to be a better, do something better at your job. Like, you know, so
hey, can I plug my,
in a second, whether you can get your, become a better salesperson through wrestling promos or learn technique from Samantha Rund. And then you don't have to spend 15 years listening to.
Right. You can cut that curve down.
You can cut that down. It's a lot.
Flatten that curve.
Yeah. Because you don't have 15 years now to become a good salesperson. Let's give a shout out our host. Blake Kiltoff has his own, I don't know, what's it, a mobile media empire? Is that what we call it?
If you want to see more of my content, find me on OnlyFans. And,
I knew the second you put content in quotes, I was like, oh Lord, where's he going with this?
Peach Boy, like Beach Boy with a P. Uh-huh.
Wouldn't it be Peach Boy?
Peach Boy. You can like and subscribe me there.
He's also a DJ. You can do your wedding.
I can do your wedding.
If we ever have weddings again.
If we ever have weddings again or comedy again, I hope people come see the show. I'm going to be at Laughs, hopefully, if they're still around. And
I'll be on the Ed Sullivan Show if it's around. Okay, yes. Let's just throw, Samantha, you can get Samantha at the Oscars,
I'll be sitting next to Viola Davis in the movie that we star in together.
Yeah, we're just throwing out fantasies. Okay.
And make it
everything's
so.
In flux right now, so I don't really have anything going on, but I got a lot of irons in the fire potentially. So just follow me on Facebook at Blake Kiltoff or on LinkedIn at Blake Kiltoff PMP.
Okay. I think you'll really enjoy this episode. He's a funny dude, and we're glad to have him on. So open up your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 142, A Black and a Half Charlie Brown Christmas.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by, stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
I mean, you want me to finish before? All right.
I don't know if you want keep eating. To.
I mean, I'm going to eat this. We got some, looks like some sweet potatoes. So we got, what do we got over there?
This is just some salmon.
Salmon. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Can you eat salmon as a diabetic? Is that okay?
No.
Is it okay?
No, this is a cry for help right here.
Should we? I have 911 on my phone.
How fancy. You have the premium version, don't you?
Hold on, Blake. Your children are older than mine, right?
You know, I think Willow's the same age as your Willow.
Five?
Oh, okay. No, mine is six.
Okay. Is that the oldest?
No, that's the youngest. My oldest is 10.
Oh, okay. When did your children learn? Do they know how to call emergency on your phone?
I don't think they would be able to handle it in an emergency, but I think they would be too freaked out to like navigate the whole screen situation. Cause you know, these phones now, it's like, if it's actually an emergency, it's like I haven't trained them on like, okay, take my finger and apply it to the back thing right there in order to unlock the phone. But there's also like an emergency call thing on here, I guess, where like if it's an emergency, you press buttons. And yeah. I don't know.
I keep trying to show someone how to do that, like my daughter, but I have face recognition on. So every time I look at it to show it, it opens up and I'm like, wait, okay, no. So I try to block my face to like show it. I'm sincerely worried because I at a young age, and it was very easy for people to learn. Kids to learn to dial 911 in an emergency.
We taught our oldest when she was four because we had a landline at the time. But
yeah,
haven't reviewed it with her now that she's 10. I kind of assume in a real emergency, she would figure it out.
Use her own phone or
no? She doesn't have a phone. She's not going to get a phone for a long time.
I'm at home a lot with the kids and I have worried a lot about dying while I'm home because like I fall and then they don't even know what to do. Right.
Yeah.
I've got
like, they don't even laugh.
Right. Well, they laugh, but that's it.
I'm kidding. I didn't think they don't want to.
Like but. I tried to tell the 5-year-old like, okay, so if daddy was ever like, couldn't talk or something and it was an emergency, you'd go next door. And then she just gets upset. Like she doesn't want to hear like, what are you talking about? What do you mean? You know, so she's,
is she your oldest?
No, my oldest is 13, which is,
oh, well just leave her in charge.
She's not like, always here.
Oh,
I feel like two things from this.
Yeah.
One, I wonder how many accidental crank calls they've gotten from well-meaning toddlers.
Well, 911 they used to, yeah, but now
a lot of.
I'd rather have the occasional wrong.
Oh yeah, no. I'm not saying that you're parents. Not. I'm not. Oh well, yeah. I'm not saying you're not correct in this. It just never occurred to me that like they might be getting accidental crank calls from kids who are like well-meaning but don't quite get it yet. You know,
I accidentally called 911 the other day myself because apparently if you like hit your phone. Like your iPhone, if you like double click it in a way too fast, like it'll call 911. Yeah, as soon as it happened, I remembered that I read this was like in the new, a couple iOS, iOS's ago, they installed that as a safety thing, that if you click it fast, it'll dial 911 so that you could quietly call 911. And I did it on accident. Like, I see it dialing and I hung up like, oh, no, no, no. But they call you back if you dial 911.
It's you're having a lot of problems with your phone. Like, on the one hand, when you're trying to use it, it's like doing face recognition. And then on the other hand, it's like doing emergency calls.
Yeah.
And I'm honestly surprised it's not seeing your face and calling 911.
Oh, that's my gosh. I should have seen you writing that down.
I was
set up punch. Bam. Word. That's why Blake is as he's better known as B Locke. That is why you are known as a joke slinger in town. You just,
is that what people know me as?
No, but I mean,
I don't. Yeah, that's,
I think people that know you should know that you're a pretty good writer. You're pretty good. Slanger of jokes.
Maybe. I think the people who know me best know that more than anything else, I'm very, very, very low on self-esteem. So let's choose a different topic.
Not at all. I mean, it's not like if I commented on your Facebook post without liking it, that would upset you or anything. Obviously. So I would never breach such a decorum.
So what's this show? What's it about? Why is it called Black and a Half?
And we've been recording. Yeah. Black and a Half. Originally I was the half. I'm the half. And then, it started with Manny, Martin and I, and he was the black. And now it's Samantha and I, and we're both the half. But I like to think of it as we are so black that we are black and a half. Also, we do have a lot of black guests, I would say. So kind of like Aisha Tyler's show, her old show, Girl on Guy.
Yeah.
But it wasn't always a guy she was interviewing.
Sometimes I never watched Aisha Tyler's show.
Well, it was a podcast, so you would have been staring at a computer or an iPhone.
I don't intake a lot of podcasts or media in general.
You don't?
No. Mostly I watch monster movies these days.
You say monster movies?
Yeah. Well, shows. That's what I've been doing a lot. That and playing Among Us. Well, Netflix has a new show out called Sweet Home, which is a South Korean... It'd be great if it was North Korean. A South Korean adaptation of a manga, I guess. And it's about all these people in an apartment building and suddenly the world ends and they get overrun by monsters.
Yeah.
And it looks kind of cheesy, but it's really good. I really like it. I like creature features. Before that, I was on a big Berserk kick. You know, the manga, the classic one that's been going
Sweet Home, is that animated or is it?
It's live action. With computer animation. And it's the pacing's a little slow and melodramatic, which happens a lot. I notice with foreign movies, they tend to take their time getting to the blood and guts, which is fair. It's like, you know, they don't know what we want here in America. It's like, get straight to the killing and the monsters.
None of this story development.
I just like creature features. I can't remember what the last one I watched. I mean, Berserk was that filled up a couple weeks of reading and watching. There's a lot of different film or TV adaptations, and I'm reading the manga too.
Do you rewatch a lot?
Yeah.
Like, are we going back to old 50s creature features like Mummy and?
Oh no! Like I rewatch stuff from when I was a kid. Like
But I mean,
actually a lot of anime, surprisingly.
But I mean, like when you say you're into creature feature, do you like,
I grew up on Godzilla.
Too? Okay.
I grew up on Godzilla and King Kong, and werewolves. Those are like, I don't know why they all tickle me in this special spot. But they do. I like, my favorite movie is probably Alien. I like special effects, especially practical special effects. I really dig it. My second favorite movie is The Thing, the original.
Yeah.
So it's like it's just a.
So what do you mean by creature feature then? Like, are you would count movies, Alien as one?
Yeah, yeah. Basically, movies where there's a creature featured in the plot, and it's, you know, done with a lot of practical effects, and it's kind of the focus of the movie. Whether or not it's in the movie the entire time, okay. I relish it for that experience of watching a monster on screen. I don't like vampire movies because I don't consider that a creature feature. That's melodrama, and that's more of like a thriller than anything else. Like, it's basically two people with little teeth. But that
bat.
Show,
they could be a bat.
Yeah, but that's not a creature. That's a bat. That's,
ooh, what about the Shape of Water?
Didn't see it, but I would count it. Oh, I did see it. I saw it. God, 20 years ago. Ooh, that's got Paul Giamatti. Really, right?
That. No, it wasn't Paul 20 Giamatti, years old.
Well, I'm thinking of Lady in the Water. I'm thinking of Lady in the Water.
Oh, okay. Because I'm like, it's a different feel, but I was considering, you know, with what you're saying.
It won the Oscar like 3 years ago.
That's like, that's more porny than creature feature.
It doesn't seem porny.
I'm pretty sure they have sex, don't they? Doesn't he have sex?
I mean, I think did, but it wasn't like
you can't have sex as a creature?
I mean... It's not porn. It's porny. Like they made a decision. The producers sitting around the table were like, what's his name? Oscar, the guy who made the movie.
De La Hoya. Yeah. No.
Guillermo, we love this idea, but we need you to add something to the script. We're gonna sell tickets. There needs to be some fish fucking.
They need to like.
I did not even. I did not remember that part.
I didn't see it. To be fair, I'm pretty sure people talked about the sex scene with the fish.
I didn't remember that part so much, but I thought it was a really good movie. It was really interesting. People had a lot of discussions about it.
I remember the fish cuddling. But
I remember the romance. Was there maybe some poem reading in it, some poetry? But but anyway, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts if you do get around to watching it at some point.
What was interesting about it to you?
I guess like what I remember, because it's been a while since it's been a few years now. To me, I'm going to ruin it for you, possibly.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay, then. To me, I had imagined that, like, neither the main character or the fish creature guy, god guy, whatever, he was supposed to be, like, otherworldly or something, right? But anyway, neither one of them belonged where they were, right? But because she had these, like, scars behind her ears, I thought it could be, like, an interesting like adaptation of the Little Mermaid narrative where she really belonged in the water, because it's like she had these like closed gills on her ears. So like from the beginning, I think I was seeing it a lot differently than the other people that I talked to some of my coworkers about it the day after I saw it. And the way that we saw it was like night and day. Like my coworker I was talking to about it, he was just like, oh man, why does this woman like have sex with the fish? Oh yeah. So they did talk about it. You know, why does this happen? And I was like, no. Like it wasn't just like this one level stuff. Like I wasn't, you know what I mean? That's why it seemed interesting to me.
Hmm. Yeah. If the creature doesn't like tear someone apart, then it's not a creature feature, in my opinion. And I don't mean like I don't mean bloody. Like he has a big dick. I mean like he like literally tears someone apart. Then
you want blood.
Like so Jurassic boring. Park, you wouldn't consider a creature feature because dinosaurs are too like real.
They literally tear people apart.
I know they do, but do you consider a dinosaur a creature?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a creature feature. I mean, in my book, technically it's sci-fi. So I guess it's not a creature feature. I don't know.
Well, aliens is sci-fi, but you're calling that.
I mean, is a creature feature fantasy is what you're asking.
Right. Yes, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Plus all the Jurassic porking in it.
Oh my God.
If a creature feature had to be fantasy, then in a way all pornography becomes creature feature. And I gotta go with no.
Was that always the thing that you were always been into these?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I loved Godzilla movies, loved them. And werewolf movies became an interest. I got into special effects when I was like 10. I started playing with latex and fake blood and making special effects and things. I would go to school with like cuts and bruises and bat wounds I had just put on myself with makeup because I thought it was fun. There's a show on Sci-Fi.
Called the authorities, so it wasn't that realistic, huh?
I mean, I guess I wasn't that good at it.
poor kid.
There's a show on Sci-Fi Channel that's for dorks like that that started running a few years ago called Face Off. And I get that show. It's like, oh, I get it. Yeah. And that's a good example of like what I'm talking about. If you want to understand what I mean when I talk about practical effects. Huh? No, not the movie. It's they bought the rights to the title. Every episode, Nicolas Cage has to have a special appearance.
I appreciate it for a different reason. I like the practical effects, like for like Star Wars, them doing practical creatures and effects.
I would consider Star Wars almost a creature feature.
Except they don't tear anybody apart.
Because of Chewbacca?
I mean, Chewbacca threatens to tear people's arms off a lot. The first movie, he literally rips C-3PO in a new one, doesn't he?
No.
Most movies, doesn't he rip his arm off? That.
No.
No, but he is running around carrying C-3PO's parts. Yes,
but he found him all torn apart. It wasn't him.
So he says.
It's not Wookiee shame. Don't need to bring that into it. Are you a Christmas fan, though?
Yeah, I guess. No.
The Grinch is a creature feature.
Gremlins a creature feature?
Gremlins is a creature feature. The Grinch
is a
holiday classic with a creature.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say it is not a creature feature because in order for it to be a creature feature, it has to fall into the subgenre of either horror or sci-fi. And holiday classics, by definition, are neither. Now, if you're dealing with a holiday classic that is a horror movie like Krampus, that's a creature feature. But The Grinch is not. It's a family movie. Yeah. So is Jim Carrey's The Grinch a creature? Yeah. Is he wearing a lot of makeup? Yeah, but it's not a creature feature. The feature of The Grinch is love and the friends we discovered on the way, or whatever the theme of every family holiday classic is. You're trying to segue the conversation into about the holidays.
Yeah. Samantha didn't catch that. But
I did. I just had to ask.
Are you a holiday? Do you have holiday movies that you watch?
Do I? Yeah, I like Nightmare Before Christmas.
Gosh, he's wearing red. Oh wait, that's the wrong show. No,
I actually watched Nightmare on Elm Street for the first time in my life this Halloween because I decided it was time at 36 years old. It was time for me to get over whatever the kids when I was 10 told me about it and just muscle up and watch it. It couldn't be that scary. And it really wasn't. It was, it didn't stand to the test of time. It was okay. The first one was good. It wasn't good enough for me to watch the sequels. Instead, I watched recaps of all the sequels, until like 2 a.m. So I've seen all the murder scenes in all the Nightmare on Elm Street movies, but I missed most of the plot of the later films.
But Nightmare Before Christmas,
love that movie. I've always loved musicals, and that movie just enchanted me as a child. And I'd say I watched that every Halloween, around Halloween, Christmas time. Christmas itself, I don't think I have a holiday classic. I had a family tradition of going to see a movie on Christmas Day with my mom when I was a kid. And
dang!
What? Now it's...
No, he said a family tradition. Did you say a family tradition? He's like, by yourself?
Well, to escape the family.
No.
Oh, okay. There's that.
But no, like my ex really liked Home for the Holidays and she wanted to watch it every year. She did.
Movie, yeah.
Yeah. And what's the other one with John Candy and Steve Martin?
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Ah, yeah.
Planes, Trains.
That movie stresses me out so much. I've only seen it once. But what? Did we talk about this before?
No. Why does it stress you out?
Because they're having such a hard time on their travels. And it just, oh my goodness. It like, I'm like, oh. It's just.
You played Lady
Macbeth. I like them both. Well, yes, it's different when I'm playing a character. I could have been in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and been less stressed out than watching it.
I can relate. It's, you know, we're living through a time when the stress and anxiety of a holiday like that is so much on top of everything else. I think the cheekiness of that film, or the humor of that movie, is it lands better when it can be taken in stride. It's like, yes, they're dealing with a lot of stress, but there's also not a pandemic or a civil war.
But I mean, the thing is, like, I'm just like that all the time. Like with certain movies, like Ben Stiller movies. I like Ben Stiller, but a lot of his movies stress me out, because a lot of his movies, it's like he's in a stressful situation. There's physical comedy and whatever ensues, but it stresses me out.
Once again,
I empathize. What can I say?
Once again, Samantha mirrors my wife. It's
yay!
ridiculous thing.
See,
I don't understand this.
She's my bestie that I don't know much
because
yet.
Of movie characters.
Well, see, and you're a performer and director, but and it's funny because people say that that's what they say to me, and I'm like, but why do you think I'm such a good actor? You guys, years of training and all that, but it's like. Because I imagine like that it's, you know what I mean? I'm suspending disbelief and living in the story when it's happening. I'm not like removing myself from the story to be like, it's fake. Like I'm so immersed in it and I'm reacting to them as if they're real people.
I've got a holiday movie for you, Samantha. My favorite Christmas film is The Ref, starring Dennis Leary.
Okay.
Kevin Spacey. And I forget the other one, but
The Ref.
Yeah.
The female lead, you mean?
Yeah, the female lead. I'm blanking on her name.
Oh, how convenient. Well, you know. I'm teasing. I know you're not like that. I have a hard time watching Kevin Spacey now.
I know, but you gotta
anything it. Anything I've seen of his before, exactly. The stuff I've seen before, I think I can still watch. But
It's hard. Kevin Spacey's a tricky one because it's like he had us fooled for so long. And it's like, wow, he really committed to the role of Kaiser Sose. Yeah. Like,
dang it.
I'm going to pretend to be someone I'm not for my entire career.
Man. But you know, you can watch. Like, that's the great thing about kids is like, I can show Sierra this. She'll have no idea she doesn't know who he is or what he did. So there'll be a generation gap that suddenly will come to love Kevin Spacey, and then they find out who he was, what he did later. Like Bill Cosby, right? Oh, well,
I play Michael Jackson songs for my kids sometimes.
Oh, yeah. That one's another one where it's like, yeah.
That's where I learned to separate in my head and just like, just dance. But
the Lady Gaga song?
Yeah.
Yeah,
but The Ref, it is literally one of my favorite. But it's a little stressful. You should try.
It's very stressful. You probably shouldn't watch it.
That's so funny. Oh my God. There's the new Grinch. No, there's a Grinch musical out, and I tried to put it on while I was folding laundry, just so because it's like I didn't have to really pay that much attention to it. But the way that the design is. I know I don't like to talk ill of things, but it's doing popular. It doesn't need my approval.
I don't like the Jim
the design
Carrey
of it. It creeps me out. The one with the dude from Glee. It's streaming right now. It's like a new Grinch musical or something.
Whatever.
But like just the way that the design of like the makeup on his face, like it was freaking me out. I was like, I'm gonna have nightmares.
Is it better than the Jim Carrey one? Because I hated that.
I don't think I saw the Jim Carrey one, but no,
should be a cartoon.
Or wait, no, I think I did watch the Jim Carrey one, but no, Jim Carrey, the makeup on that didn't creep me out like something about it. I was like, ooh, I mean, heebie-jeebies.
Well,
sexy.
It's not a. It's definitely not a creature feature. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
What, Samantha? You strike me as someone who would really get into Christmas. Is that inaccurate?
Oh, do I? How would you ever?
Is that inaccurate? No.
What? Yes.
You're
right.
Really into it.
I love.
How
Christmas.
Many Christmas villages do you have in your house?
I don't. I don't. No.
You know what? I'm about to get gifted. I have clients right now that I'm trying to find a house. And we were talking about, and I went to this one, we're showing this house that just had all this mix of design. And I was just like, and I said, this is so weird. This place is weird. It reminds me of when I was younger, I was trying to build a Christmas village. So I would buy pieces that were on sale, different places. But they weren't the same, you know, brand. And so the scales were completely different and I'd put them out and it just doesn't fit. And I was like, that's what this house is like. You know, it's just random, wrong scale. And they're like, you know, apparently the client, their dad used to collect Christmas villages. Well, like to set, like he used to collect a lot of things and resell them. He was like, before eBay, he understood value and stuff. Apparently what didn't grow in price was all these villages that he got that thought would go up and they didn't.
Yeah.
And so she's gifting me, like she has like 10 or 12 Christmas homes to give me.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So I'm suddenly gonna jump in my, because we started a Mickey Mouse Disney Christmas village.
That's nice.
What's a Christmas village? What are you talking about?
What do you mean? What are you talking? What do you mean? What's a
what are you talking about? I don't understand what we're talking about.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
It's
is this like
a
thing
a
in your yard?
Zone.
Like you're making a village in your yard?
No, in your house. You just
it's like a miniature house. Like miniature
like,
things.
Like, have you ever
like in Beetlejuice? Like in Beetlejuice, he's got the village town that he's making a model of upstairs
yes.
in the attic?
Yes.
But
just
Christmas?
For Christmas. So sometimes you bring it
weird.
Out. You bring it out
that's
just
weird,
at
dude.
Christmas time. And no, it's not weird. There's a whole industry around this. What are you doing?
There's a whole industry around selling furry costumes too. Well, that's so weird.
No. Well, it's similar.
No. Some people just like to dress up like foxes or beavers when they fuck. No. Some people like when they celebrate the birth of Jesus, they like to make a little village, a little town, and they decorate it with Disney characters.
It doesn't have to be of the of Neverland, whatever he was born in. Nativity.
The manger.
It doesn't have to be.
Oh, so it's like an extension on the nativity scene. Is that the idea?
I don't know. It's just villages. It's what you have. It reminds me of train sets, how you would make like a big area for your train to go around. But this is just
all year round.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's the part that's throwing me. It's like if you have a hobby of like making a model town. OK, that's cool. That's a cool hobby. That's not too weird.
It's just like extra decoration. That's
but you're
all.
Not like
snow globes.
You're not spending a lot of time on it. You put them out like on a mantle or something. It's
you
your
spend
little
a minute and a half explaining to us how your collection is growing, implying that you not only have a collection, but that you're cataloging it.
We just started
yeah, but
it.
I feel like we're getting to the other most important part of that is it sounded like you were about to gift me one of these.
What?
Oh, sorry.
Of your extra 10 plus.
Now we're getting to the real point of Christmas.
The real point is my present from you, Silas. No, just kidding.
I don't know what's going on. I don't know what just happened.
I'm kidding.
Oh, things to people.
Oh my goodness. No, but for real though, nobody asked me about my Christmas movie.
What? Oh yeah. What is it?
Yeah. I thought it's not. I'm just throwing it in there.
No, what is your Christmas
movie? Charlie Brown Christmas.
Ah, I'm so close.
Is there a real movie?
Oh, what did you say?
I said Elf. I guessed Elf.
Oh, no, Elf too. I love Elf. Yeah. Yeah, Elf
I'm not sure
and Charlie
I can count
Brown Christmas.
The Charlie Brown Christmas is a movie.
Well, I mean, it's short, but it's
it's a film.
Yeah.
It is
a Christmas
film.
It's a Christmas classic.
Is it over an hour?
I don't remember.
I believe 56 minutes.
You know, it's a holiday classic.
I never know with Blake if he just
I don't know how long
straight.
It is.
Like
I don't see it. I don't see it every year.
He could just tell me it's and I'll believe
how long is Charlie Brown Christmas? Okay, it's 30 minutes.
30, yeah, it's not over.
Yeah, I thought it was shorter, but when you said that, I was like, oh, cool, okay. Guess I got to look forward to a little bit longer. But that's what it is right now. You Elf watch, and
so the Charlie Brown. Okay, so I just watched, there's a thing on Netflix called The Holiday Movies That Made Us.
Oh, yeah, 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 I've seen a few
of that. So it's
I saw Home Alone and Elf.
No, well, this one is just about the holiday ones, and
No, I know, but I'm saying I saw those two episodes.
Or there's the Christmas movies. Home Alone is a different one. That's Movies That Made Us. This is Christmas Movies That Made Us. And it's about Elf and Nightmare Before Christmas.
I saw the Elf one, but not the Nightmare.
The Nightmare Before Christmas was astonishing to me to learn everything that went into that. The Elf one was pretty fascinating. I mean, I didn't realize. Do you realize if it wasn't for Elf, we probably wouldn't have the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
I mean,
aware of that?
No, but explain, because that could be true of a lot of things.
Well, Jon Favreau, it's one of his first things. Like, it was really lucky that he even got to direct Elf. He had never done anything before, like, really. And someone convinced him Vince Vaughn convinced someone to give him a try on directing this. And it was the success of Elf that directly led to him being able to pitch doing Iron Man with Robert Downey Jr. And he pushed for Robert Downey Jr. If Jon Favreau had not stepped in there for Iron Man, it wouldn't have happened. Like, Iron Man, as we know, it wouldn't have happened. And without Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr., MCU would have never existed as it does today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is our mascot.
Is that a cat? Is there a cat?
You hear, right?
Yeah.
So they're murdering a cat at Samantha's house right now, as you can tell from.
He's not supposed to be in here when I'm recording.
Yet,
but somebody let him in. No, I was like, you keep him out of here when I'm recording. I don't want him going to the potty.
I'm actually allergic to cats, so yeah. I need to get that cat out of here.
Just have
actually,
the.
I am gonna. Why I'm gonna ask him.
The cat should go into the west wing.
Yes. Absolutely.
I don't know why you would allow the cat in the east wing at this time of day.
I know. How?
So here's an interesting thought. We're talking about Charlie Brown Christmas. Yeah. And I know, I hope I'm not divulging a secret or anything, Samantha. I know that Samantha's religious or at least spiritual. And I imagine that the value of Charlie Brown Christmas beyond it, the nostalgia factor, is the fact that it actually has a message around the meaning of Christmas. That's certainly something that my ex-wife brought up a lot. She's very religious. And I've found in other conversations with people who really value the Charlie Brown Christmas, they like the fact that the plot is very simple and innocent, and the moral of the story at the end is really to just sort of emphasize Charles Schulz's point that Christmas isn't about Santa Claus and Christmas trees. It's about the birth of Christ. And it just occurred to me as slightly ironic to realize that this vehicle for the message about the non-commercial aspect of Christmas is Charlie Brown, one of the only cartoon characters or comic strip characters to have a parade float in the Macy's Day Parade. Like we have an icon of commercialism telling us how.
How I have a Charlie Brown Christmas tree in my living room. Yeah. That's.
I'm glad that made you laugh, Silas. I thought that was funny. I wrote it down while Samantha was talking. I was like, oh yeah.
I haven't seen it in a while. Do they mention the birth of Jesus and everything in it?
You know what's so funny? Because I did list it, but you know, I love it, but it's not like I see it every year. So I was actually looking forward to seeing it again this year and being a little bit like, oh,
well, I hate to spoil the ending.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler. No.
Basically.
But yeah, I think it's some of what what you said. It's like nostalgia. It makes me feel like a kid. It makes me feel like I'm back home, like being a kid watching that with my family, you know? And then I just like, it's a sweet story. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did I tell you I played Charlie Brown in Good Man Charlie Brown in college?
Believe it.
I think you did tell me that. Yeah. It's cool.
And everybody joked the whole time that the only brown guy was Charlie Brown.
You got typecast. Yeah.
I will say that was one of my most enjoyable roles because we did perform one afternoon for a group of like third graders.
Wait, did you say you were the only black guy on the cast?
I was the only brown guy in the, yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't make you Snoop Dogg.
Oh,
oh my god.
I could never do the number, actually. My voice wasn't good enough for the Snoopy role. Thanks.
So the plot of Charlie Brown Christmas, just to recap, is it's Christmas and Charlie is depressed and all the kids are trying to put on a Christmas pageant and they have to get a Christmas tree for some reason and they get a really shitty Christmas tree and then they put on the Christmas pageant and then at the end one of the kids recites his line for the pageant, which is about the birth of Christ. And the emphasis, the plot is really just about saying like, look, all the trappings of Christmas don't matter as long as you focus on the meaning of Christmas, which is it's celebrating the birth of Christ. It doesn't say that super explicitly, but Schultz was very explicit about that being the point of the film and his intention behind it. So yeah, it's Christian propaganda. Enjoy. Okay. Unlike Christmas.
Unlike Christmas.
I just want to take Christmas back to its secular roots, what we were talking about earlier when
Naked
you were
Carolyn.
Well, no, but what you and Samantha were talking about earlier when you were talking about the village and whether or not you were going to give her some pieces of it and whether she was going to get some pieces of it. Like that's
or
that,
whether
you
she
asked
was
me if I'm a Christian.
Take some from my house when she comes.
Like when you asked earlier at the beginning of the conversation whether I'm a Christmas guy, it's like unspoken in that is this cultural idea of what it means to be a Christmas person. Like it's a type of secular decorating of the house, lots of glitz and glamour, really wearing funny sweaters and being very festive around Christmas as a secular holiday, not a diehard like, yes, I'm going to go volunteer at a homeless shelter on Christmas Eve, just like Jesus would because it's his birthday. Like it's very much when we talk about are you a Christmas person, we don't mean are you a diehard Christian who like really loves the birth of Christ. We mean do you like all the pagan stuff,
do you like
including gift giving and the festivities? And
do you like Christmas movies and decorating like the Griswold?
Yeah. Do you like to make houses out of candy?
Griswold like, is one of the isn't the Griswold like one of the biggest symbols of Christmas now?
Like, Griswold?
Are you a Griswold? What's the opposite of a Griswold? You don't know Griswold?
From
Christmas
the
Vacation?
Kevin Chase movie? Yeah, I haven't seen that
Samantha,
since.
Samantha, you don't know Christmas Vacation?
I've seen that like, what, a million years ago? I don't remember.
What?
It.
Yeah.
What? But what's wrong with you people?
Wouldn't the opposite of a Griswold, if I remember his character right, it'd probably be like Elf. What's his name?
Chris.
Danny?
I don't know, but Chris, the idea of like overdoing your house with lights, right? Where it's every it's a glowing orb, your house by the end of it, this over the top Christmas decorating. I can't believe I'm appalled that Christmas Vacation is a staple of Christmas. That's one movie, I guess. I guess I have to put The Ref and Christmas Vacation. Those are the two.
You really like realism in film.
I do. I want things natural.
No creatures.
Unless
no special effects.
Unless
no
they're
outer space.
In Star Wars, I want.
Unless it's a fish fucking.
Yeah. I want fish fucking. I want Christmas trees. And This sounds like a new 48, like a 48 hour Christmas project. We're going to, okay, you're going to make a movie in 3 days. Your characters are fucking fish. Your location is a Christmas
it's the North
pageant.
Pole. Santa's horny.
I would love for you to pitch movies in Hollywood, Blake. That's what I would love. I feel like we're ruining Samantha's Christmas right now. I don't know why. Yeah. I just get the sense.
It was perfect until now.
Until now.
Before this moment, there was no travel restrictions or
concerns. You guys want to see my Christmas tree?
Hold on. Yeah. Samantha, how many Christmas trees do you have?
Well, I have one.
Would you have more if you could?
Well, I'd have more.
I know someone on Facebook who has, I think, 8 Christmas trees in their house.
Well, that's how big is their house?
I mean, it's decent size, but they have like 3 in the living room and then like two
full size trees.
This is my tree.
They are thinner than normal.
My kids brought this over a couple weeks ago.
Oh, I thought that was your fleshlight.
It's cute. Oh.
No, I learned a long time ago not to put glitter on my fleshlight. That shit is hard to get out.
Is that really your tree?
Yeah, I'm not gonna decorate like with a tree. Like I live in a little apartment in a storage lot. I don't have like Nate. I'm not. Who am I gonna impress aside from my kids?
Yourself. I like that you just laughed. I'm like yourself. You see it with your own eyes. But I mean, if it doesn't spark joy for you,
Christmas doesn't spark joy for you, Blake. Is that what it is?
No, but if I'm gonna, you know, do things for myself, I'm gonna do things for myself that actually matter to me.
What? Like a creature feature?
Yeah, like while I watch monster movies at night, or I, you know, tidy up my house. I don't like
giving.
No, I like Christmas. Don't get me wrong. I like getting presents and giving presents, but decorating has never been Halloween decorations. I like doing that. But like, no. If I had a house, if my kids lived with me, yeah, I'd do the Christmas tree. I like the traditions, but by myself, having to deal with cleaning up after a Christmas tree, decorating a Christmas tree, putting the Christmas tree, it's just a bunch of shit I don't want to deal with. It's like, nah.
Well, if you don't want to, you don't have to. That's for sure. But it doesn't take that long if you did want to.
Can you
drink? Yeah, but I don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. So if you don't want to, like,
eggnog and rum, is that okay?
No. No, I don't drink, and I can't drink eggnog anyway.
Eggnog? I haven't had eggnog in years.
Wait, you don't drink at all?
Yeah, I sobered up last summer.
Oh, okay.
Hey.
No wonder you're such a chuckle fest now. So, Blake, I met you. I knew you before I met you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I'd seen you at Laughs Comedy Club, and I was like, I want to be like that guy.
Mm.
This guy hosting he's incredible. I want to be that was such a good show. I was you, Jeff Lott, and I was seeing Jake Johansson. It was for my birthday.
Oh, wow. That was a great weekend.
A birthday present. Yeah. What? I don't know that I ever know, like, what were you always into comedy?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, funny story. You're actually the first person who ever paid me to perform. Like that show with Jake Johansson hosting at Laughs. That was not a paid gig.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were running a show in Bellevue a year or two after you started. You were running a show in Bellevue, and you asked me to do a spot. Maybe it was Redmond. I don't remember. Maybe it was that place in Lake City.
You know, I've run so many places. It's really hard to. I've had so many shows fail. It's hard to keep track.
You know, you go around
Daryl's
doing
Tavern. Daryl's Tavern, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. You go do shows and. You know, you do 10-minute spots here and there and here and there. You were the first person who ever just gave me $20 for a 10-minute guest spot. I was like, hey.
Weird.
Um, So it was really funny when you told me last year that I was the first comedian who you saw who made you feel like, oh, anyone can do it, which
I didn't say that.
I took just, it as a compliment, I guess.
No, I had just see. No, no. I had just started doing comedy and they gave me a present to go see a show. You were the first show at Laughs I ever saw.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is what I want to be doing.
I got into comedy when I was a little kid. My dad, who I've always had a difficult relationship with, I guess, because we're very different personality wise. That was one of the things I can remember doing together that was just kind of good. Like we all enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Watching HBO, watching stand-up comedy. A lot of inappropriate stuff looking back, like things I wouldn't watch with my 10-year-old, but nonetheless, you know, it's good. I remember the first time I listened to Bill Hicks, I think my brother lent me the CD and it just kind of opened my head up to this like world of, commentary. And, the main thing is that I didn't think it could be a viable career or a viable option for me until after I'd finished college. I didn't even think of it. I still don't think of it as a career. I view it as a hobby because of the diabetes and the child support payments and everything. It's like, yeah, I'm never going to make that jump into like, I'm a full-time comedian.
Because unless, of diabetes?
Yeah.
Well, you need health insurance.
I need health insurance. Yeah. I mean, I can't live without health insurance.
I want to see the PSA from Blake. You know why I'm gonna, people will tell you disabilities will never hold you back. They're lying. I have a dream that I'll never fulfill because of diabetes.
Well, you know, the dream is to be able to perform comedy for an appreciative audience. Okay. I would like to be successful. But for me, I've had to just look at what that really means. Like in our society, we have this sort of implicit definition of success as being financially and famous, financially rewarded and famous. But when I spent some time really thinking about it, it's like, well, I don't see a viable path for me to do that while keeping both my kidneys. So What does comedy mean to me? Like, why do I want to do it? It's not because I want to be rich and famous as a comedian. I would like that. But really, it's about self-expression. And this, by the way, is evolution of the art. Like, I got into comedy for, I didn't even get to that part. But like, this is like, you know, over the last few years, I've started to figure this out. So I'm not in love with doing comedy part-time. I'd love to do it full-time, but I'm content with doing it like as my side hustle, as the thing I do outside of work, because that's the world I live in. I can't move to Canada where they have free healthcare because I got kids, and I can't not have a job with healthcare because I have diabetes. Without a job in healthcare, even if I was buying like state-run insurance, I wouldn't be able to financially survive taking care of my health.
Right.
So it's like, yeah, it's kind of a middle path thing. As far as like how I got into comedy is because I was exposed to it early as in life and I was always funny. At least I like to imagine I was.
Oh, what happened?
I Diabetes. It's very traumatic. I went to college pursuing a sort of egotistical need to like get a degree and be intellectual. And in college, I discovered that intellectuals treated comedy very seriously. And that was the first time the door opened to me to realize that like I could satisfy this egotistical need to be serious and be academic with this innate need to be funny. And that, you know, sort of led to a lot of studying of comedy theory. And this is all very dry and boring. And then I finished school and then I moved back to Seattle and I started going to open mics because I had studied a lot and had no practical experience. And I really wanted to see if I could be funny. And it took a few years for me to figure out that it would take a lot of work and then a few more years. And then I finally started to get funny. And then the pandemic hit. So, you know,
Have you been able to cope without it?
You know, I literally had therapy at 6 tonight, an hour before this, and me and my therapist had this whole conversation. And the answer is no. I am really suffering.
It's not funny. I'm laughing.
I am not doing well.
I'm laughing because that's how I feel sometimes. People are, how do you do it? I'm like, not well, but what am I going to do? I don't know.
It's like, as far as self-expression goes, it is what I do. It's writing jokes and then going and performing them live for an audience. And there hasn't been an effective substitute. Like, I've made a couple funny videos and posted them online, and it's gratifying, but it doesn't hit the G spot for me as far as like what I was getting out of stand-up comedy.
Wow.
And
we're impressed that you know that there is one. Okay.
And
explain some of your weird pauses on stage.
Nice. The need is still there, and I don't know if there's going to be an effective substitute. Like, I haven't really even been interested in Zoom comedy shows. I see people doing them because it's like, yeah, I could do those just to exercise my joke writing muscle, but like, what I get out of comedy, I don't know if I'll get out of that. And at the same time, I'm also just super busy. I got my job, I got school, I'm working on another degree, and I've got my kids a few nights a week, so.
Do you ever perform for your children?
What are you going back to school for right now?
Computer science. I'm trying to finish up a CS degree so I can make a lot more money so I can get out of the rat race more soon.
Cool.
My ambitious plan for how to escape my financial need to pay off all my debt and take care of my kids and take care of my diabetes is like, okay, maybe if I become a programmer, I can accelerate things a little bit. I thought along the same lines of like, if the goal is really just to make money, shouldn't I just get into financial stuff? But
programming is actually way better, easier than financial.
That's what I keep. It's like, I'm good at programming and I like doing it. So if I'm going to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, yeah. If you're good at it and you like doing it, like, yeah.
You can bank money in a few years, you know, live well below your means for a few years, bank a lot, and then put it into. Then do financial things with it. And
that is the plan. Yeah. So that's why I'm getting a CS degree. It's like I have this long term, which sucks at 36 to have a long term plan. But like I've got a long term plan of like pay off all my debt.
An optimistic plan.
What were you asking you were asking something, Silas, when Sam asked me about school?
I was just asking if you ever performed for your kids.
No, obviously right. Not. You know my material.
I want you to do stuff about your ex-wife. I think that'd be funny.
The only joke I tell my kids is the one I wrote for them, which is why, and I've only told this in the club once because there was a child in the audience. Mm-hmm. Why don't elephants? No, why don't? Why do elephants like giraffes?
Why?
Because giraffes will always stick their neck out for somebody. why don't giraffes like elephants?
Why?
Because they're too nosy.
Oh, I enjoy it. They're good. Those are good.
Those are good jokes for kids.
I'm gonna tell my daughter those when I go off the air here.
Go for it. Yeah. I forgot the setup. The setup is about them being neighbors in the zoo or neighbors. Like gives it a little more context. But
you know what? Cut right to it.
Stick their neck out, nosy. Stick their neck. That's all you gotta remember.
Yeah. Okay, Blake. The first time someone comes on our show, we have 7 questions that we ask them. It's the black and a half world famous.
What if it's questions. The only time they come on your show? Or the last time?
Then that's it. I'm okay. Just saying,
just want to make sure.
if you're ever invited on again, we will never ask you these questions. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The next time you're on, it'll be all about your favorite fish movies.
Yeah. Which are your favorite Little Mermaid. Fish fucking movies?
Oh my gosh. I was keeping it clean, but you know.
Remember the one with Don Knotts when he turned into the Incredible
That's
Mr.
That's what I was trying to remember. Yeah, what
Incredible
is that?
The Incredible Mr. Lupin, I think, or
Lupin? That sounds right.
Incredible Mr. something. Yeah. I looked it up.
Little Mermaid, Jaws, and I count The Abyss. Pretty much I like. Oh, Deep Blue Sea. Again, creature features.
Okay.
Actually, ooh, and I saw The Meg too. Not very good, but giant shark movie.
Loved it. Okay, so here they are, the world famous seven questions.
Okay.
With Blake Kiltoff. Blake, what are you most nerdy about?
When you say nerdy, do you mean like fandom or
anything? What you really get into?
Berserk, Wolverine, that's probably it.
I thought you were going to just say creature features. That's what.
Oh, creature features. Like, yeah, sure. Like, yeah. But like, yeah, it's such a. It's like saying I like horror movies. Like,
well, you're furries or whatever the heck. Of all of the industries you could have picked, that was the first one you picked. So I don't know.
What, furries? So yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I could say like
I'm really nerdy about kinda, furries.
I'm a bit of a knowledgeable. I'm not a kinkster, but I know a lot about kink and I participate in the kink community, so to speak. So, but I'm not really a nerd. I do know a lot. know a lot of people. what am I a nerd about? Women. not Harry Potter. I used to really be in the Dragonlance books. I read all the X-Men, but Wolverine was really the only reason. Terry Pratchett, but not so much anymore. I'm on a big Berserk kick this last year and a half, like buying fan stuff because I'm a fan, thinking about getting tattoos because I'm a big fan. But I've only recently become comfortable with the idea of being a nerd about something in the sense of like, I always felt like if I expressed my appreciation for something that there would be a sort of a level of poserness to it because I didn't really feel like it was okay. Again, self-esteem issues galore inside my, it's like I've only in the last year gotten comfortable with the thought like, oh, it's okay for me to be a fan of something. I actually don't have to be like an uber fan in order to like wear a t-shirt that says I like something. It doesn't mean anything other than I like it. It's like,
yeah.
You're asking the question at a weird time because if you'd asked me like a year ago, I probably would have been like, nothing.
Nothing. Yeah. I don't like anything.
Not comfortable telling you. But, oh, and Daft Punk. Huge fan of Daft Punk. Wouldn't say I'm a nerd in the sense of like knowledgeable, but definitely know their catalog. And DJing in general. I mean, obviously that's kind of a esoteric and I'm pretty knowledgeable about it. So it's called me a nerd in that regard. Fleshlights. I can tell you a lot about fleshlights.
What's something? No. Okay, next question. What's something that you love to eat?
Ribs, beef ribs in particular.
Oh, spare ribs, huh?
I'm a big fan of beef ribs. It was a special treat my dad made many weekends when I was a kid, and it's like a comfort food for me. Don't eat them a lot. It's pretty rich. And, you know, with diabetes, there's a lot of things I love to eat that I can't eat. Like, I can't eat pizza. I can't eat pasta. It's just like, this shit just makes me sick. I love it, but I will not sleep well, and I will. It's like being allergic. Like it's kind of like that, except it's just complicated.
Well, I'm not getting diabetes then if I didn't know that.
Looking at you. Dark chocolate.
Yeah, but in Blake's defense, though, like, is I don't think anybody wakes up and is like, "Yeah, I'm going to try to get the beaties today." Like, I don't think that's anybody's plan, unless if they're looking for an excuse to not be able to achieve their dream of being a full time comedian. They want something to blame it on. See earlier in the podcast if you're just tuning in now.
Okay, what's something that you love to drink?
Coffee. I'm a coffee snob. I have a little pour over set up at home. I like pour overs. They're one of the best ways to brew coffee. I know this because I've read people's blogs about how to brew coffee well. And number two on many lists is pour overs. Number one is an expensive like press system I don't want to spend the money on. And when I brew coffee, I put a paper filter inside a metal reusable filter because it's not about the environment for anymore. It's about taste. The metal filter catches all the dregs. The paper filter really separates the coffee oils, which gives you optimum flavor. I like to take a spoon, pour a little hot water in, stir it so that the coffee grinds can bloom. That's what it's called. I learned this from blogs about coffee. And then I pour more hot water in. So I love coffee. In fact, let's go back to the nerd question.
I was going to say.
My mouth is watering just talking about coffee and ribs now. Can we get to something else?
What kind of music do you love?
I love all music. I really do. I know a lot of people say that. I'm very nomadic, so I go through phases. Right now, I'm in a mix of EDM and classic rock. I went through a depressive phase a few weeks ago and was listening to a lot of like old records from when I was in college. And so that got me into like a classic rock phase because that's the stuff I listened to in college and it just very nostalgic for me. But, I go through phases where it's like, I'm going to listen to some Brazilian samba and I'll just be listening to Brazilian music for like a week. And then like, oh man, I feel like listening to some Daft Punk, and then I'll be listening to Daft Punk, like just Daft Punk and like some spinoffs for like a week. The stuff that I don't like is a little easier to list. It's like, yeah, I don't really like pop Mexican music. I don't know why. It's just something about them as a people. No, it's just like there's a lot of I shouldn't say pop Mexican music, because there's a lot of pop music now. I'm talking about stuff from when I was in college and I would hear in Santa Fe, and I would hear these songs on the radio of trucks driving by while I was walking down the sidewalk. And it's just, I don't know how to describe it, because it's like, it's not samba, it's not I forget the words for different genres of Latin music, but it's like there's a lot of guitar and a lot of singing and not a lot else going on. I just didn't like it. And a lot of modern country doesn't do anything for me. Some of it does. I like metal, I like EDM, I like good country. I hate bad country. I hate bad metal. Like people who say like, oh, I like everything except for country. I've heard those people say, this is something that always drives me nuts. When people are like, you know what? Good country, or old country is actually really good. It's like such an asinine thing to say, because when you say you like old music of any genre, what you're really saying is like, hey, if you go back in time 30 years and pick out the best 20 songs from that decade in that genre, I agree. They're pretty good. It's like, I guarantee if you go back 30 years to when like the country songs that you think you like from that era were good, you're going to hear a lot of shitty country. Yes. The stuff that survives today is the good stuff.
Yeah.
Right? So I like good music. I DJ, and I'm mostly a top 40 DJ. When I say DJ, a lot of people think like I'm producing music. No, I'm not producing shit. I'm just mixing stuff. And I'm just mixing stuff in the sense of like, this song will go well with that song. I've been doing that since college, and it's really fun. But it's really just a matter of like liking music and wanting to play certain songs together, because thematically or lyrically even, they just kind of like flow in a way that you like. So I like most music. Probably my go-to, like what I listen to more than anything else, is background music. So a lot of lo-fi hip-hop. last couple years, because that's because that helps me when I'm coding and writing.
Okay.
Barely music though; it's mostly just rhythm and beats and stuff.
Right. What do you love to create?
Jokes. I love to create jokes. I love something that makes me laugh, and then figuring out how to transform that into a recipe that I can write down and put onto a Facebook post or say out loud on stage or say to a clerk at the store. And it's just like ready made, make someone else laugh. It's a very fun creative endeavor. And it really works for me because I have a hard time finishing writing projects. Like if I'm like, I'm going to write an essay, I never finish it. I'm not exaggerating. I've got boxes like this, just full of notepads and scratch ideas and things of like things that are just disorganized ideas for writing projects. And the only things I ever finish are jokes. So that's why I love to create. I wish I had the discipline or whatever is missing in my brain to allow me to sit down and start a project and finish it over weeks. The best I can do is come back to the same small thing and finish it over weeks. And that really only works if I have open mics to go to work it out. So that goes back to our earlier conversation about like, do I miss it? Yeah, I miss it, because without the discipline of the live performance, without the discipline of the schedule, I don't have the external framework I need in order to keep producing or creating.
What's a game you love to play?
Oh, and semen. I like to make semen.
Oh, okay. What's a game you love to play?
Like in general, games? Like video games?
Any game. Yeah. Any type of game.
Among Us. I really like... I don't know what the word for it is. Samantha, you might know. What do you call it when you are pretending to be something that you're not, but not acting, like, you know, as a game? Like playing characters, playing with puppets. Is there a word for that in general outside acting of the profession?
Oh, like puppetry?
No, not just puppetry. Like, you know, like if you like to talk philosophically about the reason for...
I thought you were setting me up to say something sexual just based on all of throughout the episode. It's like our dirtiest episode, our Christmas episode.
Oh, sorry.
So anyway, okay.
Am I too blue for you guys? So, I apologize.
No, I mean, it's what it is. It's just, that's why I was like, something. What are you trying to set me up for? Okay, so... Mm-hmm. What, so real
it?
Talk. You,
we can redo what? It. We can acting. Start over and do the
phone. No. So, but you're talking about like you want to do the voices for like puppets and like basically character work, but it's like being expressed by some.
Like when I'm with my kids and I'm playing and stuff, like I will do act outs a lot. When I'm with like friends and stuff, I like to do act.
Role playing.
Improvising.
Role playing. That's, I think, the word I was looking for. Improvising, yeah, that goes hand in hand with it. I like playing games that involve role playing. Yeah, I like role playing games in general. I don't like playing a lot of online games like World of Warcraft. I've never played it, but I grew up playing role playing games. I grew up playing not Dungeons and Dragons, but a ripoff called Rifts, and I started playing online games like Dragon Realms when I was a teenager, and I played them up until I was 18 and I left for college and then I quit. And I've never really gotten back into online role-playing games, but I really love role-playing games like God of War and Witcher and playing Among Us is a lot like that too, because you basically get together with a group of friends, and it's, on the one hand, it's like, who stole the cookie from the cookie jar? Was it me? No, it was me. It was you. But on the other hand, it's also like you're straight up just playing innocent when you're innocent or guilty, and it's like I like that. And it's also, that's the kind of play I do in general. Yeah, I really like role playing. I like doing characters. I have two puppets. One's a pig, one's a rat. Surprised you guys didn't ask to see them today. Frankie and Hamilton. And I've had Frankie the rat since Moss was 3, And he's a whole character. Like, I don't even know what he's going to say. He is very much, he kind of worries me sometimes, like how much I of a personality I've given him. Like, he's very inappropriate for one thing. And it's like, I worry that he's going to say something inappropriate to my kids. Hamilton is new. I got Hamilton and Edmonds last spring. And I still haven't decided if Hamilton's a boy or a girl. They are confused themselves.
Don't know sometimes for a while.
But like, I really enjoy that kind of play of like just having a character who I'm doing either with my voice, or sometimes if I want to annoy my kids or play with my kids, I'll be a character. I'll be super slow. Who is a character I made up to annoy my 10-year-old, and it drives her crazy. I love it.
I wonder why. Okay, I am interrupting you for a second because I have to find out. Do you play, have before, like everything was shut down, do you play a one-night ultimate werewolf?
No, but that sounds awesome.
Yeah. Okay, you guys, when things are safe again and we could gather again, we have to do a one-night ultimate werewolf game night.
Is it like a board game?
Just board games. Yeah, it's like a board game, but like really with just cards. And okay. So depending on how many people you have playing, there may or may not be different roles. So I think the least you can do might be like with four people. And in that case, you'd have like one werewolf, one or two villagers, and there's like a troublemaker or soothsayer or a troublemaker and a robber. But anyway, basically, they boil down to two teams where you're on the villager team or the werewolf team, and the werewolves try to get, oh, hey, and you love werewolves too. What? Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. So the werewolves try to pretend that they're villagers and they try to get a villager killed. So I bet it might be a little bit like what I hear of Among Us. I haven't played it yet, but right. We're like, you try to like pass the blame to somebody else. And so then you do a vote and it's really fun.
Yeah, I love games like that. We started playing a card game when I was in high school called Mafia, I think, which I think most people have played, where it's like, it's the same idea of like one person is the killer and you pass out a deck of cards, like whoever gets the ace of spades is the assassin and no one looks at each other's cards. And we played a very simple game of like our version of Mafia. You sit in a circle and if you're the mafioso, you can kill people by winking at them. And everyone
I remember that.
We did that in acting class or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Way back in like high school or middle school, right?
Yeah.
We would do it in breaks and during in acting class, and I loved acting class. That was my favorite class in high school. We would do a lot of improv games. He didn't tell us they were improv games, but like, you know, as a student of comedy, it's like, oh yeah, I know what a Harold is because he had us doing Harolds all the time. Yeah. And so forth. So just as far as like what I like to play, yeah. Games that involve creating characters or being a character and that are silly in the end. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Last question.
Was that seven questions? Really? You skipped some.
No, I've really? Not.
Oh. Wow.
In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Are you implying I'm going to be dead in 100 years? I mean, I know diabetes is a serious disease, but I'm a little more optimistic than you are about my health prospects in the 21st century.
I didn't say you're dead, though. But okay.
Well, then how are they? They can just ask me what I want to be remembered for in 100 years.
Someone writes your biography. Yeah.
I would like to be remembered for writing something that was funny and profound in a way. Like as far as like career goals or aspirations, my desire more than anything isn't to be a stand-up comedian. It's rather to be a humorist. I view my comedy as a way of expressing views that I have on the world. And I want to eventually be able to figure out how to write them down in book form. Or maybe the mode of expression has evolved past books and books are really just an artifact of the past. But whatever it is, I don't think stand-up is necessarily it. I don't think that's the final form of my comedy. And so when I think of like who do I aspire to be like in terms of like bodies of work, Mark Twain and Will Rogers, these people who like wrote a lot and did it through humor and comedy, but also had a profound impact on the world around them. That's what I would fantasize about for my life.
Wonderful. Yeah.
What about you?
That's it. Hmm. That's not is that. Oh, that's our time. That's all the time we got today, folks.
Yeah. And now a word from our sponsors. What happens if we go over time?
Blake Kiltoff, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Silas. And thank you, Sam. It's great to see you guys.
You too.
People can follow you on Facebook, I imagine, not Twitter. Are you on Twitter?
No, I'm not on Twitter. I don't really post anything anywhere except Facebook these days.
Yeah, feel free just to comment on his posts.
Just
you don't have please to like them. You don't have to like
honestly,
them.
I don't care if you comment. Just like my shit. That's all I need is more likes.
Some validation.
I produce shows when there's not a pandemic. So if you follow me on Facebook, you'll see my shows that I produce up in Snohomish County. Hopefully once things pick up speed again, I'll start producing more shows and muscling into Silas's territories down south in Seattle and things.
Take it.
I mean, ideally I'll be moving to Seattle someday once I get a great job and can afford it. But for now I'm in Snohomish.
And then you're going to leave those damn Snohomish shows in the, in the dust. Cause you got bigger fish. You're like, I can do Capitol Hill now, baby. I'm out of here. Awesome. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays to all. And to
happy
all
holidays.
And to all a black and a half.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission.
Join us. Impressive. Live long and prosper.